This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, enough about me. Back. Got a few lined up for the rest of this week. Man, we are working on something big. Working behind the scenes. Slaving the way for you. Sue O'Connell from New England Cable News, she corrected me. It's not necking, though I call it that. Will join me in a little while. Talk about this. We'll talk about a lot of stuff. I went on her TV show right after I left. I like her. I really like her. I can't help it. She's a liberal. She's crazy, but I like her. We like each other. Clearly, we have a good time. She's fun. I disagree with her on everything, but she's a good sport and she can take shit and give it out. Like that's all you need. So I had a fun talk with her that we'll have here in a few minutes. I brought her on ostensibly to talk about this Luke O'Neill Globe thing because she wrote something about it over the weekend. What I'm going to say to her is what I'll say to you now. So if you don't know, the backstory is Luke O'Neill, who is a crazy, you know, left-wing guy. I remember when my whole thing came out about me going to McLean over the summer. He tweeted something like, you know, I hope he doesn't kill himself. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, he's still an awful person or something. I don't know. So if you look at his Twitter history, his tweets are now protected. They've been gone protected, unprotected the last few days. He has a history of tweeting out just crazy shit. I mean, using the C word for women, the R word for those who are mentally challenged, talking about advocating for violence, punching young Republicans in the face. So the Globe knew all this and then hired him to write an online column only where he suggested he thought about urinating, I think it was, in William Bennett's food, was it? Years and years ago? Or Bill Kristol's food? I forget. Years and years and years ago. Of course, the column is now down. And people, you know, people were flipping out over it and going crazy. One of the biggest regrets in life, he wrote, was serving Bill Kristol salmon and not pissing in it. I now have the unedited version of it. It was not defiling his salmon is what they wrote at the end of it. The second turnaround. The first one was basically he wanted to piss in it. The second one was defiling the salmon. And then they then corrected it again with a whole new headline. One of the biggest regrets of my life was serving Bill Kristol salmon and not telling the neoconservative pundit and chief Iraq war cheerleader what I really thought about him. So this is now the third version of it. It goes from pissing in his food to defiling and then telling you who he is and then what he really thought about him. The Globe then took down the column. Completely from the website. And this is completely 1,000% on them. This is a guy in the past, Luke O'Neill, who has tweeted, I mean, just, you know, again, I'll just give you a couple here if you want them. Worst is from 2011. Worst songs of the year, all the hashtags, and then some other retards, he writes. Another one, always cool seeing young teens at business class AirPods because it's like a quick preview of the faces you'll want to punch in the future. Then punch a Republican in the fucking face. Go to jail. It's worth it, he wrote in 2013. Here's one from 2018. September 2018. Eat shit, John McCain, you dead old bitch. 2012. This is Luke O'Neill again. You have your average retard who still gets angry at hipsters who thought he or she used too many filters on her videos or something. I won't use the C word, he said in 2018, but I can say Ivanka Trump is an amoral grifter who runs sweatshops. And then he says, I don't want to use that word as a man. And then you go back and he uses the C word time and time again. I mean, there's a history of him doing it. 2016, 2011, 2016 again. And my issue is this, you know, I'm not going to be in a position where I'm advocating for somebody to lose a job because of something he wrote or said. I'm certainly not going to do that. All I ever ask for, and I do this all the time, is consistency. So the editor, his boss, is Shirley Wong, the one who wagged her finger and wrote the column saying that I should be fired and how I'm evil and anti-woman and sexist and homophobic and all that shit. She hired Luke O'Neill and put him in the paper. Now, play it out. Let's just say I tweeted out the C word, called women the C word, or referenced the C word all the time on Twitter. Do you think the Globe might have a problem with that? You think the next day they'd call for me to be fired? I'm going to guess the answer to that is yes. Just a guess. If I advocated for violence against young Democrats, he did against young Republicans, punch him in the face. If I said punch a liberal in the face, I think the Globe would have an issue with that if I tweeted that out. I'm going to go with probably yes. But Shirley, because she agrees with him at its core, hired him, knowing his past, I would guess. If she didn't, you're either shitty at your job or you're not. So, I mean, I don't know what her defense is. I mean, obviously she's terrible at her job. She's a terrible writer. And she's obviously a terrible editor. She has no guts, too, also. She didn't back this guy up. They knew his history. They knew the kind of writer he was. He delivered exactly, in his mind, I'm sure, and we asked him to come on here a couple of times, and he declined. He delivered a column that was in the spirit of his thoughts on social media and other columns he's written in other forms in the past. The Globe had no issue with it at first. They ran it. It was online. So I'm sure he thought, hey, you know, I did what they wanted me to do. Then, all of a sudden, led by some people, me among them, I think, calling out not Luke O'Neill, who's a casualty of war here, but the Globe and their editorial process, and Shirley in particular, she allows this to happen. And then what do? They change it three times. Then they get rid of it, and they never notify him at all. Absolutely pathetic. It's a newspaper from top to bottom is run by people who, A, have never run a newspaper, never owned a newspaper, have it only because of reasons that they got there. And then they hire people who suck at their jobs. And so something like the Luke O'Neill disaster last week happens. I find it interesting. Obviously, I'm biased because I have no use for these people. But I like the way when they fuck up, they don't have to do anything. They don't have to duck and hide. They should have a day. I would call for a day of where they should shut the paper down and have a day of training and learn about the dangers of the C word and the R word and bring people in from that community who suffer from these illnesses, Down syndrome, and talk to them and spend the whole day away from it and then get back in and see how they do. And if they fail those standards again, well, then they should probably move on and do something else, because it's just not safe and it's not fair to the people out there to have something like that. But it won't happen. And Shirley, you know, went on GBH with Jim and Marjorie, the softest landing spot in the, you know, fucking, you know, tsunami of cotton balls she landed on. And you know, as it was in the past, you know, they just let it go. You know, Hillary Sargent, who obviously had her issues with McGrory, they fired her because of a T-shirt. And when she was the editor of Boston.com, right? Shirley's the editor of the Boston Globe, the editorial page. This happened under her watch. Nothing will happen. Nothing. She'll run the fucking paper someday. I guarantee you that. So it's interesting to watch them squirm as they screwed up that entire process. So Sue Okamo, as I said, from Neck and wrote a column about it. Sort of. We get into that. Her career. We get into the sort of where she feels gay America is today with Trump and Pence, but she's fun. I like her. I enjoy the conversation. You will too. We have some other stuff lined up here for the rest of the week as well. You know, as I try, I responded to a tweet today, yesterday, I should say. Yes, today is Wednesday. Yesterday, yeah. Asking me if, you know, I'm going to do more stuff like the radio show was. And I get some of that. People are nice and say they enjoy the podcast and this and that. We'll have more podcast announcements down the line as well. But yeah, I think as Moroso or whoever the producer is sort of figures out his way, the producer will become more of a character. People like Sue, people like Alyssa Kleinwein a few weeks ago, people like Brian Riccio hates me. They're all going to become part of the world here. And we'll probably do more interactive stuff before we get to the actual podcast interview or mailbag or whatever it is. So I think you can get more of that going forward as we just try and figure it out. But as I also tweeted out yesterday, the conversation I had with the gentleman from the, now I'm forgetting his name. I'll look it up right now. Let me see here. My baby takes the mannequin. Andrew Beckwith, the president of the Massachusetts Family Institute, who I had on for, I don't know, whatever, 40 minutes earlier in the week. You know, it's a long-form thing, and it's a real disagreement, but I enjoy it, and there's nowhere else you're going to find it. Nowhere else. You can find this other stuff that, you know, the stuff I used to do that wasn't sports-related, you're not going to find anywhere else either, obviously, and we'll do more of that. But, you know, the idea to have this conversation while I just had with Sue, long form, would never exist anywhere else. So I am enjoying that process. But I also appreciate that I enjoyed doing the other stuff. So we're going to get more of that as well. We're just, you know, I know it doesn't seem like we just started this, but we just started this. So there you go. Sue O'Connell from NECN, or New England Cable News, as she says, the host of The Take, First Take, The Take, I think, was Sue O'Connell, joins me right now on Enough About Me. Okay, Sue O'Connell hosts, well, what's the name of the show, Sue?
It's called The Take with Sue O'Connell.
The Take with Sue O'Connell.
If you put your name in it, it's harder to get fired from it.
But not really my case, I guess, but I suppose that's true. I think I'll be on the show again. I was on there, whatever, 4 or 5 months ago.
Yes, we've got you scheduled to come on as soon as we can clear any of President Trump's mishigas.
That should be easy enough. First of all, before we get into all the other stuff, how does that, do you enjoy doing that show? Is that show successful?
Oh,
is it, do people actually, I mean, I, until I was on, I had never heard of it.
Yeah, I took over the show. Before it was The Take, it was Broadside, which was Jim Brown.
Oh, Jim's show, yeah.
Yep, and so I took it over, and then we changed the name, and I'm coming on 3 years, and it's a blast. It's so much fun, and I get to talk about, you know, two or three topics a night, and then meet all fun new people like you. So there you go.
Yeah, we had a good experience. I thought we had a good time, and then I saw you talk to Steve Buckley in that hideously shitty column he wrote about me in The Athletic, but I don't blame you for that. He asked to talk to you, talk to him.
I said nice things about you. I said you were warm and personable, I think.
Yeah, I don't know how warm and personable I was that night. I think we were okay, right? We were fine.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, you're a lunatic liberal, which is fine. As I said, I appreciate the fact that you're, I have no issue with it whatsoever, but what brought me, you to my attention, this weekend was the column you wrote. So Bay Windows, do you own Bay Windows?
Yeah, I'm the co-owner, co-publisher,
okay, which
and
is
editor of Bay Windows, as well as South End News, which is the neighborhood paper in Boston.
Okay, Bay Windows. Why is it called Bay Windows? That name throws me off.
It throws me off, too. I didn't name it. It's been around since, like, 1984. It's the LGBTQ paper for the region. And the original editor thought that, you know, because a lot of gay people were closeted.
And, oh, I gotcha.
You could look out and look in. A window was sort of a way to look back and forth between communities. So,
yeah. And would you say if you were starting a newspaper today or an online thing today, I obviously don't have a lot of experience in this, but it would seem to me that a lot less people are closeted than they were in, say, 1987 or something.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
But, you know, there's still issues within the community.
Sure.
And you know, the Trump administration is rolling back civil rights. But, yeah, and it also was, you know.
Well, how was the Trump administration rolling back civil rights?
Well, they're immediately the transgender ban on the ban on transgender service members.
Right.
Which is about to go into effect is one. The judges that are being placed, you know, all of us pay attention to what Trump is tweeting and what's happening. But in the meantime, he is executing a flawless conservative agenda in getting judges on the federal judge, on the federal court cases to make rulings that are going to have an impact on America for the next 30 years.
Are you gay, Sue?
I am.
You're gay. Okay. How long have you been out as a lesbian for?
I have been out since about 1985.
Would you say that until Trump was elected, say 2 years ago, that it was sort of the, you know, progress was being made in my eyes anyway? Again, you would know much better than me, at a pretty accelerated rate, not the rate that the community would want, I suppose,
sure,
but it
sure.
seemed like things were going. And by the way, I think in a weird way, I think Trump being president, whether you think he's anti-gay or not or whatever, has almost made the community sort of stronger. And I feel like it's gotten more support in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you're right. There's the LGBTQ civil rights movement, I think, may be the only civil rights movement that was sort of powered by Fortune 500 companies.
Right.
In that, in the late 1980s and early 1990s, they started offering domestic partnership benefits. They started advertising to LGBT couples. And they're probably the first group that started to do things that the government didn't require them to do when it comes to civil rights, right?
Right.
So, you know, then we got state-by-state marriage. We got national marriage. There's still states where you can be fired if someone thinks that you're gay. So it's not like it's a slam dunk across the board. You know, and remember also, Obama was not a supporter of same-sex marriage.
He was not.
Hillary Clinton.
No.
Not until
the wind started blowing his way, I would say. That way, you know.
I would agree, you know, and there was a lot of controversy around Hillary Clinton being endorsed by the Human Rights Campaign, which is the nation's largest LGBT political organization. She was the least friendly to gay marriage of all the Democratic folks running for the nomination. But I think that after gay marriage with the Supreme Court ruling, there was a feeling like, okay, well, now we can just go live our lives and not have to worry about things. And now we're kind of back on alert.
You know, so I'm pro-gay marriage. I voted for gay marriage in California. When I lived there, that was, would that have been 2004, 2005?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I have honestly no issue with it. Fantastic, great, knock yourselves out. What is, let's say I'm having a conversation. Are you married or no?
Oh, no.
Single.
Yes.
Say, oh, really? Single looking? Any ladies out there or no?
You know, I think at some point when you're get to a certain age and you're single, people start to really wonder why, and it's harder to get dates.
So. Never married?
No. I actually am not a big. I don't think marriage is for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think marriage is for me.
Well, how old are you?
I am 57.
57. No long term relationships lately?
Nope.
Hmm.
You want me, something wrong with me?
No, I'm willing to help you out. I have a fairly large lesbian audience. I'm happy to help you out if you'd like.
Okay.
No, not so much.
I'm all set with.
Okay, fine. I don't even know where I was going. So the Q is for, because I screw this up all the time. The Q is for queer now.
Or questioning.
Questioning. You
know, it's a big tent, Kurt.
Well, but isn't queer and questioning two totally different things?
Yes, it is, but I don't know how many more letters we can actually.
I'm not being even like, I'm honestly being like obviously a little tongue in cheek, but it gets very. One of the days we had Alex Remar and we went through all of them. It gets very confusing.
It does, and you know, I'm one of those people who I'm old enough that it used to be just gay, and then the lesbians had to fight to be included, so it became gay and lesbian, and then.
Oh, so the lesbians were not even included initially. It was just the guys, the fellas.
No. Just the white gay guys.
So the white gay guys were sexist.
All in the shot. Yep.
Jesus, what a bunch of assholes.
I tell you, everywhere we go, they are.
Right. That's right. You can't avoid them.
Everywhere we go, you can't get.
But I'm cisgender straight, right?
Straight. That's right.
Okay. As far as you know. But I'm
so
saying
far.
Right. Yes.
Right.
It gets okay. what is intersex?
So intersex is actually folks who were born with characteristics of both genders, right?
You mean
so
physical characteristics?
Physical characteristics.
So it used to be known as hermaphrodites. Right.
And as we know more about science and pay more attention to medical science, we realize that there's really no firm fixed. For some people, there are. I mean, some people are firmly male and have all the male packages, and female are female, but there's a whole space in between where it's happening in the Olympic athlete world right now, where some people have higher testosterone or higher estrogen and are not necessarily fitting into these male-female boxes that society has made, where medical science is saying, no, there's a whole area in the middle where you're not necessarily fitting into that category. So intersex folks in the past were gendered by doctors. A doctor would make a decision. They'd come out and say, your infant could go either way. We're going to make a call and make it a male or make it a female, and not necessarily tell the child. And they would grow up with all sorts of problems because of, you know, the way their brain works or the way their hormones work. So intersex folks they fall under the category because they feel like they don't belong to the general society when it comes to gender and sexual expression.
Here's something that's been, you alluded to it kind of, and it's been in the news lately with the marathon happening, obviously on Patriots Day. And this is where you sort of feel like people are going to pigeonhole you or define you as something. I think qualifying for the marathon time, I've run the marathon, Boston Marathon, 4 or 5 times. Qualifying for it is really difficult. So obviously there's a different standard for somebody born a man versus somebody born a woman. Just, we all understand the physical differences, right? I mean, there's men are just the top, men are faster than the top women. We understand all that.
Yeah, interesting. But in the marathon, in running, you know, that's one of the areas where scientists think that it soon gender will not be as much of a difference in terms of performance. I mean,
well,
the elite women beat the vast majority of
That's definitely true. But I guess my point is, like, you know, the top.
If you and I were going to race.
Right. Yes. Well, I mean, you'd be in the senior division, so you're 57 years old. I mean, I'm not going to have you run a marathon. That's dangerous at your age. But the idea that somebody born a man is going to run now as a woman using the woman's time feels, it just that one feels like I'm on board for almost everything else. But there are certain things where I feel like you have to say that no matter whether you're transgendered or not transgendered, like sometimes you just don't get everything. Is that unreasonable?
No, this is an issue that Martina Navratilova.
Yes,
and
Paul. And by the way, Paula Radcliffe, who won the New York City Marathon a few times, and Boston. But yeah, Martina Navratilova, who I'm sure for somebody given the time that you came out, I mean, this is a legitimate icon in the gay community.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no doubt about it.
And she took a lot of shit for this take. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, the issue is that, first of all, it's not happening, right? If we're going to have the discussion about it, we need to understand we're talking about what we think is going to happen in the future, right? So it's not happening on an Olympic level, on an elite athlete level. And in order to, go through gender affirmation surgery and all that goes along with it, it also changes your hormones, it changes your physique, it changes your muscle mass, it changes everything. We're not just saying that one day you wake up and say, I'm going to race as a woman and not go through any of these changes, okay? So this is sort of a future conversation. There
Sure.
are situations where it's happening on the high school level and some on the college level, but then again, we're not talking about elite athletes here. We're talking about just young people playing sports for enjoyment and health. So it's a discussion I think that's worth having, but I think we just need to be careful that we're not just saying you're changing and checking a box.
Well, we saw the high school sprinters in Connecticut set the state records. I think it's a tough argument. My bigger concern, I guess, is one of these days, is it going to happen in, you know, is it going to be mixed martial arts or wrestling or, but where the physical difference actually leads to real violence, you know, soccer. I don't know. You know, I think these things can happen.
Yeah, they absolutely can. I think they're worth discussing and trying not to look at them from a fear base. But if it's going to happen, how do we feel about it? What are the rules we want to put in place about it? Is there a place where we can actually see everybody competing in the same mix and being successful at it? I don't know.
Are you still racist?
I still am aware of racist things that I do based on the institutional racism in society.
What an answer. What a fucked answer that is.
I just got a diversity award. So
you did? You might as well just say you have a lot of black friends. I mean, saying that is the same thing.
One of 40 white women who got an award from the Get Connected organization for my work on bringing diversity to my television shows.
What the hell have you done to bring diversity together? You have people on this show of yours?
I make sure I have a diverse group of voices on and cover issues every single week.
Oh, jeez. Well, what's the name of the award?
It was White Woke Women.
Oh, jeez. Christ. Is that really the name of it, or are you just bullshitting me? You're funny. I can't help it. You're a total lunatic, but I can't help it. I like you. I can't help it.
I like you too, sir.
So let's talk about this. What's that? Go ahead. No, go ahead.
We could date. That could be an interesting. That could be a whole reality show.
That would be a good show. That would be an interesting show.
I'm saving your career right here.
Yes, there you go. That would actually help a lot. So this column you wrote this weekend got my attention. The Bay Windows thing, and I saw you. I think you tweeted me. You tweeted a bunch of people. So it seemed to me, and tell me if I'm wrong. So I am going to tape this after I do an open, which is where I talked about the whole Luke O'Neill thing, because I've been out of the mix lately, which was, I'll just give you my nickel thought on that, and then we could talk about everything else. Like, I feel like this is 1,000% on the Globe. They hired a guy who has a history of writing insane stuff, like whether you like him or not, whether you're on his side or not on his side, tweets crazy shit. If you had spent, the people in charge spent 90 seconds looking it up, like the people in my, you know, my minions who did it, you'll find that stuff. Then when they hire him and tell him they're going to write, I'm sure he presumed, hey, they want me to do what I do. He does what he usually does. They have no issue with it until the shit starts beginning, and then they totally, completely puss out. Like, I don't agree with a lot of what O'Neill says, but he delivered what he was supposed to deliver, I think.
You are absolutely correct. All right, then. Bye-bye.
Oh, good talking to you. See you next week. But, I mean, you know, like I don't, you know, I think it's such a, I think the Globe did him such a disservice, and now are putting his face in the mud, and then they bowed, which I hate. I mean, you know, look, I have to be consistent. Like, I'm doing a podcast now instead of a radio show and on WEI because people bowed to pressure. The Globe did the exact same thing.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. I mean, there's really no quibble about any of that. I have seen, I think, over the past few years, and as a owner of a newspaper, I understand how hard it is to compete in the digital world with daily, you know, people want daily stuff now, or hourly stuff, rather than waiting for the morning paper or the weekly paper to see what they want. And I think that the Globe's standards for editing things that appear online and don't appear in print is not as high as the standards they have for what appears in print. And Luke's column was an online.
Well, that's no excuse, though.
No,
I mean, that's
no
a representative excuse. Of the. I mean, that represents
not
the paper.
Nope, not an excuse. Just that was my perception of what I've seen happen.
And that's on. That is on. I mean, you know, obviously, I have no use for this person, but that is completely on Shirley. I mean, that's right.
Yeah, and she said so. She went on Jim and Marjorie's show on GBH and said, you know, basically the buck stops here. You know, she had not seen it before it appeared, which is not uncommon, unfortunately, across the world for an editor of a section to not necessarily see what goes in the section.
Yeah, but Sue, they didn't know who he was?
No, they have. He's written for them like
right.
300
that's,
times.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, why the surprise? Like, I don't know. Shouldn't they be then saying, so here's the thing, like,
yeah.
You know, there is a blatant, and I tie it into me because it's, you know, ultimately it's the only thing I really care about other than my kids and Bruce Springsteen, my family, is like, ultimately, you know, the Globe's inconsistency on this, even when you tie it to me, you have Shirley wagging her finger in an op-ed saying I should be fired. She's glad I'm gone, da-da-da-da-da-da, for, you know, hatred towards women. This guy used the most, imagine if I tweeted out, and pardon my French here, you know, I know you have virgin ears, Sue. Imagine if I tweet out the word cunt multiple times.
Yeah.
What do you think Shirley would do then?
No, I agree. She would do exactly, she would say that you shouldn't be on the air.
So why does she write a column saying that Luke O'Neill should never write for them? And by the way, I'm saying I should, you know, she shouldn't have done that about me. She shouldn't do that about him. But where's the consistency? Where's the one thing about the Globe is they lack this self-awareness, I think, where they can't say, hey, Luke O'Neill called, you know, if I called somebody a retard on the radio in 2019, which I would never do, my life would be over, and correctly so. Like, this guy tweeted this shit all the time, and I'm sure had no expectation of this happening. I just think, first of all, when you have people who run the newspaper who have no idea how to run the newspaper, and then they hire people who have an agenda, this is what happens.
Well, Luke O'Neill should not be writing for the Boston
Globe. Well, for this Boston Globe.
Right. No, I think he should be. I mean,
you know, you wrote for the Phoenix or, right, in the old days, the Village Voice.
Why we should have the Boston Phoenix, which we don't. He, you know, could be writing for Dig. I mean, you know, it's really, it was a terrible mistake that they made that was self-inflicted. And I, you know, I salute Shirley for coming right out and saying it was.
Oh, please. Sue, cut the shit. She melted under pressure. The people on Twitter went insane, and she melted under it.
She didn't have to say that it was.
Why didn't she tweet out that this happened? Why didn't she have somebody write a column about it?
Thing. See, that's why I wrote the blog post instead of tweeting, because I got to tell you, I'm kind of feeling done with the Twitter, because it's I wasn't even going to weigh in on this so much because I've not been on Twitter a lot lately.
I saw this. You're taking a Twitter hiatus.
Well, not necessarily. It's just this engaging back and forth on these points. And people expect that if you don't respond within, you know, 5 minutes of something happening, then you're complicit in agreeing with it. And it doesn't give you time to find out facts.
But she could have done it a day later. First of all, they changed the column without acknowledging they changed it. Which
right,
is
that's wrong.
Totally. I mean, to me, fireable.
I spelt your name wrong in my.
I know you did. I don't understand that at all.
I went in and fixed it after one of my colleagues pointed.
Well, that's fine. I'm going to have when I tweet out the podcast for this, I'm going to say Sue Okamo, the heterosexual, longtime Neckin. So I'll get back at you. Is that fair? Okay, the 58-year-old heterosexual, all right. But that's what I'm saying. But what I don't get is, like, so they change it, and you know what they're trying to do there. They're trying to duck and hide. So you could say, don't tweet anything out. But my issue with them is they're responding to the heat from Twitter. So you can't then ignore Twitter when Twitter is causing you to do something.
That's a good point. See, look at all this agreement.
So your issue is you agree philosophically more with the Shirleys and the Globe of the World than with me. So when they really fuck up, you really can't say it because you're probably friends with them.
No, I'm not. And I just understand as an editor, I mean, I have made some really atrocious mistakes. I've been editing the paper for about 10 years. I've been at the paper since 1998. I've been in broadcast since 1984. I've done some really, really stupid things. Some of it because I wasn't managed properly, some of it because I wasn't paying attention managing people. So I think I'm just more likely to, and just like I've said about you and other broadcasters, when you speak extemporaneously for so much, eventually you're going to say something that you mean not to say or didn't say it the way you want to say it. So I'm actually generally forgiving about this, but I stand by that, you know, Luke, that column should not have appeared in the Boston Globe as it was. It was a failed satire. I don't know that the Globe can accommodate satire like that.
Well, he has said since these. I mean, he is. I'm like a satire. Like, I think he wouldn't mind. He wouldn't have minded pissing in that. Like, I don't think that's. I think he really has hate for that side, which, again, I don't really honestly have that big of an issue with. But let's not pretend that satire to me is code for, like, you know, it's liberal, so it's okay if he does it. But if Kirk Minahan does it or a right winger does it, it's anger.
I also compared him to Dan Savage, who I don't know if you know.
I know Dan Savage.
You know, and Dan famously had the flu and lit the doorknobs of a Republican, was outrageous and atrocious. And that was actually assault in my mind. So, I only responded to it because a bunch of folks were adding me on Twitter saying, why haven't you said anything about this? Oh, my God. You know, I felt I had to reset the table as to why I even weighed in about the issue with you.
Why did you write the topics entwined with Kirk Minahan?
Because there were so many people that were adding me who were including you. Saying,
That's not my fault.
But I wanted to make sure that the people who follow you on Twitter by following your, you know, have their own at Kirk column, made sure that I saw that I was responding. So in 5 years from now, they don't say, well, you never responded about the Luke O'Neill business.
But the reason you weighed in on my issue is because it's the issue of public airwaves?
Yeah, that was the whole issue. The whole issue was that, you know.
But what did I do? I'm confused. Like, what did I do?
It's not what you did or didn't do. It was more that the people who were fighting about and arguing about the issue of what the Globe column was about the guy that was complaining and organizing boycotts, we're trying to make a comparison to apples and oranges. Like, if you're in broadcast radio or broadcast television, you have FCC regulations. You have to keep a public file.
I understand. But I think what you're missing, and maybe purposely so, I don't know, is that the people who are doing that weren't so much they're stupid in their own way, but they're not that stupid. What they're saying is, you know, Shirley is wagging her finger here and then trying to brush this aside here. I think that was their bigger issue.
Yeah, no, it was, but I just felt that I had never weighed in and said Kirk should be punished or Kirk.
Why did you think I should have been fired from Lefty? I don't know.
No.
Okay.
No, I did. You know, I just felt, and that's the problem with Twitter is you get kind of swept up and labeled. You know, I had this whole exchange with this guy who was a huge follower of yours, who then started saying terrible things about you on Twitter, and I blocked him.
Said terrible things about me?
Yeah.
Who was it?
I can't remember his name right now. It was Twitter handle.
Oh,
but it's just like one of these things. It's like, what universe is this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, I think the other thing we forget is that, you know, everybody in the business gets so caught up in Twitter, and I don't know, probably 85% of the people in America who are adults aren't even on it. You know, it's a bubble. It's a total bubble. But I think the bigger issue is, and I think I guess we just agree on it, is, you know, I don't know what the Globe. So I don't understand the process of O'Neill writes that story. And you could say, which, like, he doesn't post it himself, I don't think. We've reached out to him.
No, I don't think so.
So somebody saw that, whether, you know, I think you print whatever you want. I don't care. But somebody saw that lead and thought, well, and I'm assuming for a second that Shirley didn't see it, though I don't believe her. Let's say she didn't see it. Like, the idea that somebody wouldn't say, maybe I should kick this lead around and make sure everyone's okay with it, like, that does seem a little strange to me. I mean, you know, advocating for urinating in food and all this other stuff, knowing also that O'Neill is a lunatic, and I'm saying that somewhat with affection, is strange.
Yeah, that never would have happened 10 years ago. And I, you know, as much as I think it's as much about a staffing issue as much as a who's running the newspaper kind of issue. You know, there's nothing that gets in my paper that I don't see and someone else sees. And I mean, granted, it's a very two small papers, but you know, and every mistake that's ever been made in my paper has been my fault. But it's one at least that I hope has been a thoughtful mistake.
What is the future of the TV show? What contract is good and we're all set? Do we need to get you a new deal or no?
I don't know. We'll see. I think so. I'm happy to make this my final destination, and you know, continue working at NECN and NBC 10 Boston. We're doing a monthly politics show on Sunday mornings on NBC 10 Boston. So look for that. We're excited about that.
And what's the name of that show?
It's called Talk Politics.
Oh, that's good. Boy, you put that one in the hopper, huh? Did you get a whole team for that? There'll be no urinating in food of Republicans or anything during the show.
No, I hadn't thought about it yet, but I do offer them coffee. So
yeah, I don't know if I'd trust you. All right, well, Sue, you're a good sport. Hopefully, we can get you back on. I'm looking forward to coming on the show with you and debating whatever the hell it's we're going to debate about. And I was joking earlier. Obviously, you're not a racist, although you did strangely admit to being one with me on television. I walked you right into the web, right into the web.
Well, I considered what to say, but you know, I saw you ask other people and have them say, "No, I'm not a racist," and that didn't.
Yeah, but you don't think you're a racist. You don't think you're a racist.
No, I'll tell you.
Definition of racist to me, whatever. But like, you know, if you see if a black guy or a white guy or a white woman or a black woman is car is pulled over, they need help or they're bleeding, I'm going to help. Like, who would care?
But I think that this is the interesting thing, that the reaction to that really broke very generationally. You know, the people who were older were like, oh my God, you're not a racist. Racists are the people down south with tiki torches. Those are racist. And then some younger people were like, you know, if we all considered whether or not we're racist more often, we wouldn't get to the point where we only have this one definition, and that some of our actions and behaviors and biases we could look at seriously.
Would you, as a lesbian, lesbian's fine, right?
Yeah.
Or are you gay? You're lesbian.
I don't care.
Okay, well, I don't know. People can get, believe me. Trust me, I tell you, people will get upset no matter what I say.
I didn't mean to say like I don't care. Like you don't have to ask me.
Interesting. You don't care. You don't care about gay rights. Interesting. Well, I do more than you. That's fine. I was at Harvey Milk was a friend of mine. What the hell was I gonna say? Oh shit! I just
as a lesbian, you said big setup.
As a lesbian, thank you. Let's just say you got your dream wish and Donald Trump was impeached like tomorrow. As a lesbian, isn't it scarier with Pence is the freaking president?
No, listen, there's no you don't see a lot of gay people calling for the
That's true.
Donald
That's
Trump.
True.
I mean, because Mike Pence he's smart. He knows what he's doing. He's not like completely random and spouting off. So yeah, no, Mike Pence is exceptionally difficult.
Don't you think? Like I don't know. I've had Trump on the old show once. I met him.
I interviewed him up in New Hampshire.
You did?
I ended up in a robocall for Ted Cruz.
Right.
My interview because I asked Trump if we could expect forward motion on LGBT rights, and he said yes, of course you can.
And I think now that he's Republican, I think he feels like he has to do this, but I don't think Donald Trump individually, like by himself in his house, gives a shit one way or another about, like, I don't think it really bothers him. As opposed to Pence. Maybe I'm wrong.
His mentor was Cohn.
Roy Cohn, yep.
Roy Cohn.
Who was gay.
The thing you have to remember mostly, too, is that he talks to whomever he talked to last, and that's the idea that he gets. So he just says whatever the last person says to Trump, and then he goes out and says it. And that's the kind of president we have right now.
Do you think
to send, you know, planes filled with water to dump on time? You might as well just send Dumbo with a trunk full of water to fly
it's,
over Paris.
It's a strange to tweet that. I'll concede that. I have theories myself. So, you know, Kirby Dick, the filmmaker?
Yes.
So he did that movie. It was a documentary HBO ran like 10 years ago, maybe Outrage, where it was all about these insanely right, like Larry Craig types, right? Like these really right-wing people in the Reagan 80s and all the way now who pushed these like ruthless anti-gay agendas while leading secret double gay lives, right?
Yep.
Like when I see somebody like Mike Pence, and I don't know the man at all, when I see somebody that virulently anti-gay, it's always to me confusing why somebody would care that much about it.
Well, it's like when Rick Santorum was senator, and he was asked, I think, by an associated...
Compared to animals, right?
Yeah, and he started talking about bestiality. I mean, it's
yeah, like, I don't understand. I don't like, you know, I don't know anybody who's like that anti, like, or like pro straight. Like, I don't understand. Like, I've never. So, if some guy wants to, you know, put his penis somewhere, and they are both adults and they're consenting, like, gives a shit. I don't know.
Yeah, anti-gay people spend a lot of time thinking about gay sex more than actually. Gay people do.
That's true. Like I don't really like the Republicans want like limited government, unless like you know they're in your friggin' bedroom. Then all of a sudden they. Right. I am like fiscally conservative, but socially liberal. It's why I'm a libertarian. Like I could never get next to this weird obsession with like a guy in the sky and like you know gay sex. It's fucked up. I don't. Am I wrong?
I'm so there has been psychological studies that show that people who are like virulently anti-gay and our gay bashers actually are hating a part of themselves that they think is
right.
Gay and that homosexuality is so repugnant to them because of, I would say, society that they take it out that way.
So when did you choose to be gay? What day was it? Was it a Thursday?
It was actually February 2nd.
Yeah.
19.
You just said screw it. I you know what? It'd just be easier. You know, it'd be easier in my life if I was a lesbian. I'll just go that way. Fuck it. Why not? Right?
I just thought you know, Friday and Saturday nights could just become could double.
It's so crazy. I don't know. Well, all right. The show is called The Take. Right? First Take.
That's right. With Sue O'Connell.
With Sue O'Connell. It's on. O'Connell. At what time on Neckin?
It's on 7 o'clock on NECN.
Okay. It's on Neckin.
NECN.
Why is it? What's who? Why would it matter? What's that about?
Well, I don't know. It's a funny thing. We've never been called Neckin, but everyone calls us Neckin.
Oh, and if it snows at all, you guys get preempted for storm coverage, right? Because they
exactly.
Get very worked up about that. Okay, Sue, thanks for coming on. I'm sure I'll be on soon, and I'll talk to you down the line.
You got it, my friend.
All right, Sue. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Thanks.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.